Hello, and welcome back to the Self-Healer Soundboard. This week's episode is a direct request from you, the viewer or listener. We put up a call for request on one of our social media channels the other day asking what episode topics and conversations you would like to hear on the Self-Healer Soundboard. We do this intentionally to curate really the conversations around what it is you're wanting to be talking about. These conversations do spanned globally around the world. And it's also a really great space to send these conversations to others, to have an entryway to engage in certain topics that we may otherwise not have the language for. So thank you all for sending your request. And the one that we chose for this week's episode topic is how to know if a person is for you, especially if superficial things bother you early on.
I think a really important foundational jump-off point for this conversation is for all of us to understand that these concepts, like the one, or by contrast, right? Not the one, the person who exhibits characteristics that get under my skin, that irritate me, that will be that initial early warning sign. All of those are really wrapped up in our own personal meaning, our own personal circumstances, oftentimes, again, grounded in our own past experiences. So similar to, I think I used this example previously on a podcast here. As humans, we are dealing with an incredible amount of stimulation in any given moment. And our mind outside of our awareness is always seeking to pay attention to that information that's personally relevant to us. And I think I used the example of being in a crowded room with a lot of conversations happening, a lot of stimulation, yet your head will whip around quite quickly if in a far corner of the room you hear your name mentioned. Why? Because your name has probably one of the things in our life that have the most personal meaning assigned. So similar when we think about dating, right? The reaction that I'm going to have to find something off-putting about someone is me having some personal relevance or significance wrapped around that characteristic. So if I am annoyed by something, Jenna could be sitting at a table with that person that, you know, is illustrating that characteristic. She might not even pay attention to it or notice it because in her past experience, that characteristic in and of itself didn't have personal meaning. So to really simplifying it, what we're paying attention to when we're talking about determining if someone's the one or if someone's not the one, someone's, you know, bothering us in some way to not pursue that relationship, all of that is really driven by the fact that our brain has learned to pay attention to this particular characteristics or, you know, category of characteristics, because there is personal meaning that's been assigned. It matters for some reason to us as unique individuals.
There's some form of resonance. And what you're sharing reminds me of this phrase, if you spot it, you got it. And I've shared that before on the podcast. My brother Jake used to, I think, is the first person who said that to me. If you spot it, you got it, Jen. What you notice over there in that other person is also over here in so many ways. In the thing that I'm jealous of in another person, I'm identifying and resonating with that because it is also over here in me. There are things in other people that maybe Nicole would be envious of that I wouldn't be because there isn't that resonance. So in a visual way, it's as if you have like a spider web shooting out of you. I keep thinking of Spider-Man as you were talking that, you know, you have like spider web on both of your hands and that's all shooting outward where there's an extension from you that is shooting a web outward to everyone around you. And it's going to hit and land on those that do share a similar resonance or experience or that recall some attachment to a past experience. So when we look at these, quote, superficial things that, as Nicole's saying, you know, what she might notice or alert in another might not be, we'll call it a red flag. I might not alert or make that a red flag over here, and vice versa. What might be a red flag to me might be something that Nicole doesn't even notice. Well, why is that? We're different people with different experiences, different backgrounds, and different meanings that we have also made to things. So what we're referring in this conversation as superficial and really surface level things or attraction markers for the sake of the consistency and language of this question are identifiers of something much more submerged that is beneath the surface, which is makes so much sense as to why we call it surface level. It's what we see on the surface with much more submerged underneath.
And it's that submerged part underneath in and of itself, which is what elicits, right, that reaction, that repulsion. And, you know, when we're talking and thinking about just dynamics in relationships in general, because this is what this conversation is about, we really have to understand that when we're talking about attraction or, you know, repelling or repulsion on the other side of that attraction, just to really simplify it on either end of that spectrum, each of those concepts, again, are driven by our early childhood experiences. All of the ways that we show up in our adult relationships are really driven and informed by those earliest environments. So while on the surface, we might be, you know, thinking that what we're reacting to is inconsequential. Why are you letting that thing bother you? Maybe even friends are telling us that we're focusing on, you know, superficial details. The reality of it is for us is that those things do carry possibly an emotional meaning, a loaded meaning, a point of reactivity from our childhood environment in and of itself. So superficial isn't really, you know, kind of surface level in and of itself. And when we understand that, then we can begin to understand how those early environments and relationships really are informing the things that we're paying attention to and then how we're feeling about the things that we're paying attention to.
It's really helpful for me to paint this picture with thinking of the image of an iceberg. You see the tip of that iceberg above the water. And then 90% of that iceberg you don't see, you don't know about, it's submerged underneath. That's that submerged piece that we're speaking about here. What we see, that little tip, is what we look at as superficial. We look at that as surface, almost shallow. And I see very much in our culture and society here in the United States and much in our culture around the world and online that we also have a shame attachment and a very universal conditioning to superficial and shallow and surface, or someone's looks would be something that we'd put into that category, which is a complete disregard for our truth as individual and collective beings, that ping and that identifying marker that even set off this sort of jolt or that red flag that we're labeling as surface or superficial or shallow actually is very telling of something that is much, much deeper. And that ping that is going off is alerting you to the reality of the space that much deeper is actually taking up, or I should say the actual presence that there is something much deeper. We are incredibly wise and intuitive beings. Not all of us live our lives connected to our intuition. That's the work of healing, is getting back into and chiseling away at what was already there. So that marker that you are identifying is your intuition. That is a part of you, a wisdom that is guiding you to something to look deeper and then give you the choice to become aware. You're only going to notice those markers. This person's only asking that question about superficial because they're willing to look, because they're curious. They want to explore and learn more. You only learn about the iceberg underneath if you hit the iceberg on top and crash, or you're curious and willing to see what's there. And when we are able to be aware of that identifier or that ping without shaming it, making it wrong, judging ourselves for it, all of the conditioning that we have around the identifying of the superficial, then we can actually learn from it. We can begin to grasp and connect with the fact that that is our being extending outward information for us that wants us to go back and look within so we can better understand why that's there.
That space and that process of what I'm going to call inquiry, conscious, like curiosity, wondering, why is my attention going there? Why am I having that reaction, whether it's attraction or repulsion? I really want to emphasize the importance of that process, because that's that peeling back of the onion, because we might be feeling attracted or repelled by something based on its sheer simple familiarity to an early experience. So back to this, even this concept of the one. So many of us are driven by our early childhood dynamics, relationship experiences to be seeking and defining for each of us individually what the one even is, oftentimes based on unmet needs, ways people didn't show up for us, idealized versions of relationships we wished we had, right? So that process of inquiry might mean that we're seeking just to fill a hole in our childhood, which doesn't objectively mean that that person is intuitively, right, instinctually, the objective one for us at all. So again, I really want to emphasize that process of exploration, because attraction and repulsion really are two other words that I can even apply similarly, right, is familiar and unfamiliar. We're going to be attracted often to that which is familiar, whether it's a familiar unmet need that we've been seeking for decades of our life, or a familiar experience of dysfunction, of difficulty. In that familiarity will be some point of attraction. It'll be what we think we want. It might not map onto intuitively, however, what we really would consciously choose or actually need in our life.
Especially if you are someone who comes from a lot of dysfunction or a dysfunctional family system or trauma or abuse, then this idea that is fully supported by our cultural conditioning that there is the one, there's Prince Charming, there's this princess at the top of a castle, there's a knight in shining armor, there's someone, one being that has all of the criteria that is designed and curated specifically and individually to you. They exist out there in the world, and it's our responsibility, well, our job, or hopefully a magical dream once in a lifetime to go find them and have everything just magically work out. We'll magically heal and life will be it, because our goal is primed to believe that there is some being out there that is then meant to give us the love that we deserve, that is meant to fulfill all our needs, and that they're just out there waiting. If you come from a lot of abuse and dysfunction, then the idea of that, which is supported culturally everywhere you look around, in movies, in the stories we tell, in a lot of the storybooks that we've been raised on, that's supported. And that can create a lot of comfort when you are young, a lot of safety that, you know, it's okay. This is going to save me someday. Someone else is going to save me. That puts us in a very disempowered and really a very unsafe space as human beings in general, because we're constantly outsourcing externally versus becoming, embodying, and becoming the state of being, really, and connecting to the values and what it is that we want in another. We can become what we are seeking, but that's not how we've learned to go about it.
And I think just to kind of play the other side of this coin out in terms of this idea of superficial botherings, back to what you were saying in terms of instinctually paying attention, and, or at least creating space to explore paying attention to them and what they could mean. Because the reality for a lot of us in that dysfunction is the superficial thing that our attention is being attracted to and we're reacting to is actually important, because that's been associated or connected to possibly unsafe behaviors from past people in our personal relationships. So that's to say that sometimes what we're reacting to superficially actually has a wealth of wisdom, because someone who had those same characteristics in our past produced an environment or created a dynamic that was experienced as unsafe by us. So by instinctually just rolling our eyes and telling ourselves, shaming ourselves out of paying attention to that, we're missing on all of this information. Now, that's not to say that this person in front of us in current day will evidence those same, you know, associated characteristics as the person who abused us or violated us or didn't meet our need in whatever way, though our brain is naturally making that association. So similarly, it's an active process of saying, okay, I've associated this superficial quote unquote thing with this unsafe experience or relationship in my past. That's real for me. What I'm feeling now, unsafe, insecure, how I'm reacting, I need to create space for that. However, I can also explore the possibility that that might not be what this current individual is contributing or what the trajectory ultimately will be. They're not that person, right? So again, this is why on the other side of that coin, it's a very active process of exploring, of not just shaming ourselves because we focused on something superficial, we're having a visceral reaction, exploring that visceral reaction, because that visceral reaction in some moments might be the thing that keeps you safe from the possibility that there is a present threat in this person.
So I feel very confident in saying that any ping that we have that we see is superficial or surface is a wealth of wisdom. There is something there that we can explore. Now, it may be connected to something deeper from our childhood. It may not be. We'll only get there through that exploration. This reminded me, we were talking about this topic a little bit earlier as I'm going through all of the requests, and I thought of what I think is such an aligned example of a friend of mine a few years back who was somewhat newly in a relationship with their then boyfriend, their now husband, happily married, live life together, growing companies together. And in the beginning stages of this, when it was starting to get a bit serious, kind of going to that next level, and there's that fear of, am I really going to be and choose this person for the rest of my life? Are we going to get married? Because that's what this person wanted, you know, to get married, have a family, have children, have a partner, have a husband. And at, you know, 30 something, that was that trajectory. That was the intention with this relationship. That can be extremely scary because that's a huge new life event and a new plan and a lot of trust in choosing this other person to be the one that you grow with. So that's the state of where this was. And one of the biggest issues that kept coming up for my friend that she would come to me and ask to talk about this often, she judged herself. She felt very shameful of this and was very embarrassed. Her partner had a lot of blackheads. He wasn't really a guy that spent much time on his self-care or his skincare in the ways that she did. She has, you know, very cleaned, very cleaned and tended to skin. Her well-being and her physical appearance is a high marker. That is a core value, that outward experience or outward appearance of health. She wasn't finding that in her partner, whom she loved and loves very much, because there were these blackheads that he had. And she didn't know how to even communicate this to that partner, to him, without being so wrong and superficial, like, oh my gosh, you're amazing to me. We have this great relationship. I love you. We're talking about marriage, but it's almost a deal breaker for me because you have congested pores. And while that kind of makes us laugh, and, you know, she was laughing and almost kind of crying because it was very real, a very real thing. Now, we would look at that immediately in society, and what she felt and why she was even coming to me was for support because it felt so shallow and so superficial. Well, there's two things that can be there. There's a connection there and something she's identifying in the partner about these congested clogged pores that is a very surface level signifier of something that is submerged under that iceberg that is deeper and comes from her childhood. Or there's also a shared core value that she has, or maybe not shared at that point, which is why it was starting to cause that friction. And she was noticing it so much because her well-being and her appearance is something that is very important to her, to have that health outward. So, and I'm not saying that if you have clogged pores, you're not healthy. By all means, I get clogged pores and blackheads all of the time. This is a normal human thing. It is just for the sake of reality of this experience. So in that, connected to childhood or not, there's also, you know, she really values that. And outwardly, she was connecting that value to a very specific set of circumstances. And when his physical appearance, even though she thinks he's really attractive, handsome, all that, when this very small detail of his physical appearance did not fit in this super rigid set of circumstances or that one expectation, that box of all the details we're going to hit for that one person we're going to check off, clogged pores and blackheads weren't in that box for her. So that one thing became something that actually was a much deeper meaning for her to explore. It wasn't actually about the blackheads. It was also about her inability to or fear of communicating something like that with a partner. That's really vulnerable to express that in yourself, that you've even identified that you see someone else's something so minor or surface level and that bothers you. Because we're also primed to not allow conversations in a safe way. We just get reactive or we keep it all in because we don't learn how to safely communicate or to safely have conflict, and then it implodes later.
So this is a really beautiful example, and I'm really happy it came up to illustrate this. So just even imagining, you know, this friend of yours is being someone who, right, is associated clogged pores with ill health or lack of health, you know, sickness possibly even. If they were someone who in their past experience, right, were around sick people, you know, had health issues in their past, right? Now how loaded that becomes. It's not just about clogged pores. It's about the fear, right? I'm going to really just play this tape forward of possibly losing someone who isn't in good health, right? So what on the surface feels very superficial, you know, this friend of yours is shaming, you know, herself, is possibly sharing it with you, but not wanting to tell many other people, definitely not wanting to tell the partner that where all of these feelings are kind of being elicited from. But the reality of it is it's all understandable. It doesn't necessarily mean that that person is of ill health with the clogged pores. I do have clogged pores quite often. Doesn't mean that they're of ill health, though in your friend's lived experience, that's what it's come to mean. So this kind of understanding, I think the depth of this and giving ourselves the opportunity and to communicate then, whether it's not necessarily saying we go to that partner and say, hey, your clogged pores are a problem for me and here's why, though maybe that is a conversation. If we do locate health and longevity as a shared value, then maybe that is an important conversation to have with someone on the brink of trying to decide whether or not they are the one that you want to invest future time with in this relationship. And that brings us then, I think, to the topic of communication and what really goes into a relationship, a successful relationship. One of those core things, in my opinion, at least, being shared values. So when we've done our point of exploration, if we do locate that the reason these superficial things, quote unquote, bother me is because the road does lead back to a value that's important to me, in my relationships. Now the conversation isn't about clogged pores necessarily. It's about the value. And in my opinion, again, getting clear on what our personal values are, on what our prospective partner's values are, and making sure they somewhat align or can be negotiated is an incredibly important decision process, active one where conversation and communications could happen and very much benefit, will help us then decide whether or not that superficial thing is something to pay attention to, because it might be. If it indicates a value misalignment, that might not be then the person, your person, the one you want to pursue that relationship with. However, if you do come to the realization that this is loaded and it's not connected to my values, is maybe, you know, connected to past trauma and not the reality of what's happening now, and we are still shared in values, then we don't have to pay as much attention to that reaction. We don't have to shame it because it will still happen when those superficial reactive moments come to surface.
And if you're wondering how to have these conversations or how to share that communication, that language comes from the being in inquiry, when you actually know what it is that you're wanting to express. And I've been giggling every time you say clogged pores, because we're really giving clogged pores and blackheads a bad rep, and like and skin issues a bad rep. I used to have really bad acne. Sometimes I still do. And it's things that I know are identifying markers for internal health for me. And even for this friend, it wasn't the clogged pores. Because even the clogged pores had an iceberg under them. The surface of the clogged pores, which is ironic because they're clogged, so it's submerged. The actual clogged pore didn't immediately go to ill health. It went to the lack of what she viewed as no self-care practices, no consideration of their own well-being. And when thinking about entering a long-term life partnership with someone, when health and your routines are a very core value for you, when you see something surface level that then represents a lack of good habit, that's a red flag for you. Now, because we don't communicate safely, or we haven't been modeled that's why she was coming to me. And hey, can you help me figure out what's happening here and how to communicate this. Because all there was there then, an opening between her and her partner to get even closer. That was a space of vulnerability to connect. And for her, after her own inquiry, and then she sought out a friend, someone that she trusted and knew could help walk her through that process. Part of an internal inquiry when you're being curious about yourself, not just outsourcing or going external, could be enlisting the perspective or the take of someone that is aligned, that you do admire and you trust can be objective and honest and patient with you. So our conversation really just got to a space of identifying that it was a fear that this person does not see themselves as enough of a priority to take care of their own well-being or have consistent self-care practices that aren't just using pore strips and washing your face, but brushing your teeth, eating well, exercising, all things that we might look at as, oh, some could say that's superficial. Without those things, you don't have health. You don't have vitality. Without health and vitality, you don't have longevity. Without longevity, you then don't have anything to plan for. You don't have any space of the future to live into. So while a clogged pore can then seems immediately connecting to this fear of, oh, I don't have a person that I can really healthily sustain a future with, that might seem wild. And I know we can immediately kind of make ourselves wrong for it, which is what she did. So have some grace with yourself and with others in that you even identified that and then chose to go deeper, and then you're able to communicate with that person. This person that my friend is married to now wasn't obviously, because they didn't fit the full criteria of the perfect one, though this is the person's chosen soulmate. And there's a key word in there. It's chosen. She got to open that conversation with that person and actually grow closer. And that became a way for her, through her own inquiry and inquiry with me, to have articulation for what it actually was that was fearing her with his self-care habits or lack of self-care habits when she's looking at choosing a life partner.
This really beautifully then brings us to the topic of the one. And in this very beautiful example with so much wisdom within it, you've already spoken so many characteristics, at least in my opinion, that are, you know, of a healthy, long-term, stable, secure relationship. And one of those is being safety. Safety to explore, to communicate, to, you know, come to the table with these realizations where we can explore with another person, right? What their then values are, what their then long-term plans are, how they see their future, right? It's this open and honest communication, in my opinion, is one of the, and the safety to allow that open and honest communication in the container of the relationship, that is a huge defining characteristic of this idea of the one. And then when we talk about, you know, identifying our personal values, holding space to see and hear from this prospective partner what their personal values are, how they want to see their future, you know, kind of play out. And then also exploring how we navigate differences. Can we negotiate? Can we hear, assuming that they're not so different that they can't mesh, if there is a possible point of overlap, do we enter into that in a safe, secure negotiation where one individual's needs don't trump someone else's? Because that's another function, in my opinion, or attribute of a relationship that we could define as the one, a human who we can engage in these conversations, have moments of discrepancy where we don't see things eye to eye, where we are assigning different personal meaning, where we do have a different idea of, you know, how we want to see our future go. And can we come to the table and make sure that both of our needs are being heard and met? And then, of course, if they aren't, just to play the table on the other side of it, perhaps if our values don't align, if we can't communicate, if we can't create an environment, this of course doesn't mean that there doesn't mean to be some work to create safety and security, though if we can't create that in our relationship, then maybe these superficial characteristics or however it is we're being pinged, this might be indicating that this isn't the one that we want to consciously choose to invest our time, our attention, our emotions, our resources to all of this work, again, of holding space for different perspectives, of acknowledging our shared values, and of creating space to vision that into a shared future.
A soulmate to me is someone that you choose to have mutual growth with, which means that the other person is choosing that mutual growth with you as well. So that doesn't mean that your growth has to stay the same and at the same pace and be exactly identical, because you're different humans. Likely you're attracted to things that are similar and you have different attributes that also complement each other. So you are going to be different. You are going to grow different. But the common denominator is that you're choosing to grow together, which also then has that communication piece. And if you're choosing to grow together, because you first have that commitment of growth for yourself at your core, then even if you come along the road in your growth and you realize, or the other person realizes, or it's mutual that, you know, this actually isn't aligned, your growth is no longer propelling in relationship with another. Well, in a relationship with someone where you've started that foundation that you're in it for mutual growth, then when that conversation comes that it's no longer aligned to be together, that's a conversation that can actually be had safely, lovingly, in a nurtured and compassionate space. And I know to many, it's like, okay, Jenna, let's show me how that looks. Though if you have a real core commitment to that truth of yourself and you are honest and transparent with the other person, and you're choosing someone as a soulmate because you're choosing someone who is safe and who is also willing to commit to you, then you will be able to get to that space. If you're choosing someone who fits a set of boxes to check off that either has been designed from you by someone else, I mean by Disney storybooks, mm-hmm. all of that media that we are so saturated in and conditioned in, that's not just media that poof got fluffed into the air. Those are stories and archetypes and storylines that have been written and designed by a very small select group of people. That very small select group of people wrote those storylines based on their own past, based on their own experience. And that got propelled outward, takes hold, and suddenly the whole world is living in this conditioned filter of a very small set of human beings. So if you're growing with this person who you are choosing as your soulmate and you both grow to a place where it's no longer aligned to be together, does that mean, oh, well, I guess we weren't soulmates because we're no longer together? No, you could have plenty of soulmates. You could have a soulmate in a friend. You could have a soulmate in a sibling, in a coworker, in a loved one, or a partner. That soulmate is that choice and evolution, at least I believe, and I know we believe, that choice and evolution of safe, mutual growth and flourishing with another human being. So when that soulmate relationship maybe comes to an end in the dynamic it was, because you're no longer flourishing in that way, that creates even more space and alignment for you to bring forward what is your chosen soulmate at your next alignment in life. Now, your next alignment might not be just a couple months or a couple years and then it's on to the next. Maybe that next one is lifelong. Maybe you actually choose multiple partners. I have two partners. Now that I think about it, I'm realizing I have two soulmates right now, two soulmates that I choose to grow in mutual evolution and safety with. I also know at my being, and this has been almost like a warm, comforting baby blanket to me, that what is meant for me will not pass me by. And I do truly believe that for every human being on this earth, what is meant for us is not going to pass us by. And if we can repeat that to ourselves, even as an affirmation, to maybe you don't believe that at first, sounds nice, well, practice it. And with time and consistency, that belief will actually take hold. A belief is just a practice thought. We wound up with a bunch of practice thoughts that we didn't choose as children. We now can choose different ones. When I truly believe that what's meant for me isn't going to pass me by, then I get to sort of live rest assured. And even in those deep moments of undescribable pain and heartache or fear, because it's scary to connect with another. It's very vulnerable. In those moments, I get to find solace in that, that I'm always home with me, and that whatever is happening for a reason, because it's setting me up for even more alignment, because I'm choosing to honor my truth. And when I choose to honor my truth and stay connected to my heart, that energy actually emanates outward from my actual physical heart and body. And the universe is responding to that. It's invisible, but there's actually a vibration going outward that does have a direct cause and effect and comes back to me. So when I stay aligned and I continue down that path, I'm only ever going to meet more and more and more alignment, which is really how me, you, and Lolly wound up together anyways, because we found our connection to ourself and our truth, and we kept down our path and then made a joint mutual choice to say, yeah, we are soulmates. We were all divinely merged for a reason, and we're choosing this. I'm going to grow with you. I'm going to flourish with you, and I'm going to evolve with you. That was just a choice. I chose my soulmates.
I absolutely love that teaching of yours, Jenna. What is meant for you will never pass you by. And to all of you out there listening who, when you hear that, you know, don't feel affirmed and free and light and hopeful inside, and who maybe feel cringy and clenched and, you know, kind of rolling your eyes because that doesn't yet apply to you. You don't internalize. You don't believe that to be true. The path to that belief and bringing this conversation full circle in many ways begins with first beginning to pay attention to those pings, especially in a relationship, noticing what our attention is noticing, what it's being attracted to, or what it's being repelled by, and then creating that space first within ourselves quite often, or within our trusted close relationships. If we do feel safe being vulnerable and exploring these with this with other people or with our therapist or wherever it is that we do that, and then giving yourself the time and space to really simply begin that exploration. Where is that ping coming from? Is it informing this future based in values that I want to create for myself? For many of us, it's quite different than those early childhood environments. Or is this ping, you know, indicating that this isn't a safe relationship? This isn't a space where we can negotiate. We are not sharing similar values, and then giving ourselves the opportunity to make a choice from that point. Though again, the pathway to create this trust in ourself first begins with understanding ourselves, understanding why we're having the reaction that we're having, and then giving ourselves the opportunity to create a new response when and where it's appropriate.
That time and space that you're mentioning is the space of that inquiry. It's where the exploration comes. And when we talk about the deeper submerged iceberg of the meaning of the blackheads or the clogged pores or whatever the thing is, I can hear, even as we're speaking, a past version of me too going right to, oh, well, what if that's not the right meaning? Well, what if it's something else? Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, what if it's all these things? And I put myself for years at the beginning of my journey in a total freeze zone because I was so petrified of not having the right choice of, or not having the right answer, not having the right meaning attached, and then totally screwing myself over later because I'm not being authentic because I actually saw a meaning that was wrong. If that resonates with you, take a deep breath. That time, and so thanks. Yeah, that resonates. If that resonates with you, then spending time and space, actually committing to have time and space to just go in that thought, maybe to journal it out or to just spend time wondering about it, being curious about it. When you're immersed in the inquiry and you just allow yourself to be immersed in inquiry, you're not looking for an answer. When you're just there, the answers will come. The more you go within and spend time in your own and connecting to your own silence, that's trusting yourself. That's connecting to that space within, connecting to that silence within. The more we create that safety that we're seeking in others, When we create that within ourselves and we create that trust within ourselves, then the intuitive voice that is already within us, it's just on mute for a lot of us. That intuitive voice within us in the space of trust and safety internally is going to continue to raise. It's going to get louder and louder. And the answers or the meaning that is true for you, that is the iceberg underneath that is, oh, wow, I just connected that dot. That will come when you spend time in the inquiry. So if you're like me, you're going to jump to that panic of, oh my God, I don't have the right answer. What do I do? Is this right? I would go and list everyone. I'd find any mentor or teacher I could and completely outsource. I would, someone as intuitive as I am in the beginning of my journey, when I'd become aware of all of the pathways and conditioning that were me, I looked at everyone else as my own best healer. I looked at everyone else as my expert to externalize and go find from them what I only held the keys and the answers to within. When really it was probably sitting with the space within and the uncomfortableness and the uncertainty of not having the answer right away. That was scary. That wasn't really working out well for me. So I just externalized and went outward. But it's going inward in that immersion that will allow the answers and that meaning for you to come forward, where you can start to connect those dots. And then with that inquiry, as those dots are beginning to connect, that's happening within thoughts in your mind. Well, the thoughts in your mind are happening within language, within words, or for some of us who are very visual, they're happening in visuals. That visual can have language applied to it. That language is then the communication that can be expressed outward, but that will only come from actually spending time and space in that internal inquiry.
I'm really happy that you brought up the function of uncertainty. And I really want to emphasize before we end here, the time aspect of it. Because so many of us, when we are uncertain and are feeling really uncomfortable, we do outsource to other people, to our thinking mind. We almost put this pressure, internalized pressure on ourselves to figure out the certainty of things. And we struggle to sit in time, in patience. We struggle and our mind races to locate the exact meaning, and then our mind races fearing what'll happen if we don't have the exact meaning, because in reality, we're uncomfortable sitting in that uncertainty. And I think about this often when it applies, when we have conversations too around the nervous system, right? We want to like kind of force our body to heal. The same conversation applies here. Safety, which is what we're talking about, centered in the nervous system, we can't overpower and make that happen. For a lot of us, it's these daily commitments to moments of grounded presence that allow us to then feel safer in uncertainty, to tolerate time needing to go by until we find our answer. But we can't do that initially because uncertainty feels unsafe. It feels uncomfortable. So our mind races, we outsource, we read a million books, we endlessly fear what'll happen if we don't come up with the right answer, because in reality, we don't feel safe just sitting in the present moment for another moment and then another moment until, like you're beautifully saying, our intuition begins to turn up its volume and we get clearer on how it speaks to us. And then we get that clarity. So many of us, myself included, we want to rush. We want to get there.
You can't rush your healing. That's a beautiful song.
We want to power. It's such a beautiful song. And that is of value in this conversation. We can't rush our way to the safety, to allow the curiosity, to allow ourselves to be affirmed in the meaning. We have to go through these daily commitments of creating the safety to be curious, to explore, to tolerate not knowing immediately, and to sit in all of that discomfort until we get clearer. And then until we live in action of that clarity, which then gives us the beginning of that self-trust and the ability then to somewhere into the future, and I assure you it'll happen, to have that moment of, you know what, things that are meant for me won't pass me by. I do have an idea of what my values are, what I want to see in my future. I feel safe coming to the table and having difficult conversations, and I feel safe vetting partners and deciding whether or not I need to pay attention to the initial pings of repulsion, or whether or not this is the person that I want to consciously create that future with. So as always, like you were saying in the beginning of this, we are so grateful for anyone who is ever engaging with these conversations, you know, dropping comments and reactions to any of the topics that we're chatting about, dropping in new topics. This is an open, organic, evolving conversation, very much a word for the day today is evolution. And we thank you, all of you who engage with these conversations, who share these conversations. You are part of, again, the global shift in language that allows us to get a bit clearer on all of these ways we've been conditioned, most of all of us, in our relationship and giving ourselves the possibility of having a more consciously grounded, safer, mutually fulfilling relationships. And as always, we're looking forward to continuing the conversation with all of you on the next episode.